Mr. DeCastro.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Pablo DeCastro. I'm here, as you may know, as a last-minute substitution. I was not on the brief, but I'll do my best. We're here today. Obviously, it's an issue about the application of the safety valve. The defendant gave several proffers live and answered questions and apparently didn't do so well. I think that was conceded in the district court by the defense. He later presented a written affidavit, 3 pages, very detailed and very specific, making his admissions in an attempt to provide truthfully and completely all of the information known to him about this offense. The government made several complaints, and the district court responded to those. The reason for the appeal, I believe, is that the focus of the discussion was misplaced. The focus of the discussion always came back and returned to those initial proffers and not to the letter itself. When the letter itself was discussed, it would still come back to putting it in the context of the prior proffers. For example, the government would say that he denied meeting certain individuals. When you look at the letter, he actually admitted meeting those individuals in the letter. He denied it in the proffer, so there's confusion there.
But the problem is that how does the government know that he has come clean, that he has told what he knows, and that it's sincerely done?
I think the only answer I can give, Your Honor, is that it comports with the evidence. When they come back, ultimately, after you resolve all of the little details about whether he did or didn't admit meeting this or that individual, you get down to what's basically a common sense argument, and it's made all the time in safety valve cases, that what he said.
But the progression was literally figuratively pulling teeth. He would deny things and then only admit them when he was dead set confronted with the opposite. And so by the time you get to the end, how can the government know they've gotten anything?
Well, I understand that that's frustrating. And I understand that the government would be frustrated with him and be upset with him and not want to give him the benefit of the safety valve. But it doesn't require that the government like him. What's required is that the information eventually is given and prior to sentencing. Not during sentencing, admittedly, like in the Marin case, but before sentencing. And here, this was given before the sentencing. The difficulty with which it was extracted, I don't think, although it's frustrating, is not specifically relevant under the rule.
Well, it can reflect on the completeness of it, though, I think.
It may, and it may cast doubt on the completeness in the eyes of the government.
So that's a very discretionary determination, which is hard for us to go behind.
If I may just explain the frustration from the defense point of view with that particular argument is that although the burden is on the defense and the defendant has to present proof beyond a preponderance of the evidence, the preponderance is not supposed to be such an onerous burden. And what's developed over the course of all of these cases is a system where that burden can be defeated by the government simply saying it doesn't make sense. We don't know why it doesn't make sense. We don't have any evidence, but it doesn't make sense. Imagine a situation where the burden is reversed. For example, a trial where the government has the burden. How many times can the defense stand up in a closing argument and just say, it doesn't make sense? How many not guilties are we going to get just saying it doesn't make sense? And it's very frustrating from the defendant's point of view that he provided this information. Obviously, there was difficulty extracting it, as you've indicated.
Well,
but over and over again.
That kind of understates what was going on. There were flat-out lies being told, or at least that was what the district court found in this case, that he, up until that letter, he was lying. He was not just withholding material facts, but he was misrepresenting things.
Certainly.
That makes a difference in the evaluation of whether this is a good faith effort to cooperate.
But whether the letter itself contained any specific lies was never addressed. In an attempt to address it, the government said there was a lie in the letter. He didn't admit to meeting Blount and Bridges. But in reviewing the letter itself, he actually does admit it. So the only specific instance that the government pointed to of a misstatement in the letter turns out not to be true. Everything about it is the credibility affected by the prior proffers. And Marin, although it's distinguishable because all of it happened during the sentencing hearing. There is some good language in the dicta from Marin that if it's done prior to sentencing, it doesn't matter how many times you lie before, as long as you get to the finish line in the end.
Is that what the rule and the case law interpreting it in this circuit says?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe that the rule is that the information has to come out prior to sentencing. It has to be truthful and complete, and it has to be given prior to the sentencing. I don't think there's anything in the rule that states specifically you have to get it right the first time.
That seems to cut against this whole idea of a safety valve to suggest that a defendant can be not only non-cooperative but deceptive and misleading right up to the day of sentencing and then pop into court with that letter and then get this extraordinary benefit of the safety valve and avoid mandatory minimum.
I do think that that's the letter of the rule, that he can come with the information prior to sentencing, and that's all that's required by the rule. Now, the language in the statute, the corollary statute, uses the word cooperate, and that is where you get the arguments about good faith and about the attitude, if you will, of the defendant. But I don't think it's in the safety valve. It's not in the guidelines, that language. And I don't think it's in the intent of the guidelines. I understand from the government's point of view why they wouldn't want to hand out this benefit to people that frustrate them so much. I understand from the court's point of view why people who behave this way shouldn't be rewarded, but I think the commission wrote this rule stating that prior to the time of sentencing you come with the information, you should be entitled to it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. DeCastro. Ms. Mecklenburg?
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Sherry Mecklenburg, and I represent the United States. The District Court did not clearly err in holding that the defendant failed to prove that he had satisfied the elements of the safety valve so that he could benefit from that provision. The District Court correctly concluded that the defendant lied in his two safety valve interviews and that the letter that he sent did not cure his lies and or omissions. The District Court found that the letter was too little, too late. Just to clarify, the letter was not a sworn affidavit. It was a letter on defense counsel letterhead, signed by defense counsel and also by the defendant. The letter also was amply supported in the record that when the District Court found that the letter was too little, too late. The District Court talked about the defendant's prior lies, but the District Court also had a record of what was also missing from the letter. If there's anything in particular that you would like me to point out as examples that the District Court knew was missing from the letter, then I would be happy to do that. If you have no further questions, then the government respectfully requests. Well, let me back up for one second. I just want to point out also that this is not a provision that allows a defendant to exhibit bad faith, to lie over and over again, and then suddenly to come in with a letter that patches up certain portions and not, in this case, not even all of it. And the Romuno and the Montes cases both talk about bad faith versus good faith and how lie after lie and lack of candor can disqualify someone from the benefits. And now, if you have no further questions, the government respectfully requests that you affirm the District Court sentence.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Mecklenburg. Ms. DeCastro?
Just to respond to the particular cases cited in argument by the government, those cases involved specific evidence that was pointed to contradict the final statement, not the prior statements. And I think that's what's missing here. I think that in this case, there was a lot of focus, as I said at the beginning, on his prior misstatements, misleading behavior, bad faith. I'm just not sure that those things should act to disqualify somebody from the safety valve, that there should be an opportunity, essentially, to repent and come clean. And as long as that happens before sentencing, that should count for something and should count for the safety valve.
Thank you, Mr. Cashman, Ms. Mecklenburg, Mr. Snyder. We thank all counsel, and the case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.